Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It's a good one. Just letting you know, I don't want to predict, but I think today's a good show. So let me tell you why, and we'll get ready, and then we'll start going. But we want to first invite you to join us and be part of the fun. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce our panel to you. We have Vera Icarius-Kelly here. She is a Siena College professor of comparative politics, a Thursday regular, our good friend. Good morning.
Hey, it's great to see everyone and hear everybody.
Wonderful to have you here. Also, Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld joins us. Good morning, Ira. How are you?
Good morning, Joe and everyone. Glad to be back.
Very nice to have you back. We always like when Ira's on the program, and also a semi-Thursday regular.
So semi-Thursday, yes.
Yes. Fresh from a taping of the Media Project, so we're thrilled. WAMC's Alan Shartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Yo, I'm in an undisclosed place. I can only tell you that. I can't tell you the place because I always worry about who will know.
Yeah, well, we're going to keep it secret.
Yeah.
Just between us, we're going to keep it secret.
Yeah.
We also are thrilled to, we have a brand new panelist, and we're thrilled to, I don't know how this happened, because he's very, very smart and very well respected, and for some reason is coming on our show.
He made a wrong turn.
I don't know how this happened.
Big fan, big fan.
Oh, well, thank you. The Tetherless, and is that a name? Is that a person's name, Tetherless?
No, it's actually the name of a chair, and it's a long story.
Okay,
all
right.
All day, so
it's cool. Tetherless world professor of computer, web, and cognitive science at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, otherwise known as RPI. Good morning, Jim Hendler. How are you?
Great, and great to be here.
It's Thanks. Wonderful to have you here. Thank you very much. We, of course, work with your colleague, Fran Berman, and it's a delight to have you on the program as well.
And may I just say...
She speaks well of you all.
Yes.
And may I just say that it's my favorite sport.
Tetherball.
Tetherball, that's right.
Used to play that in Bronx.
I love tetherball.
Well, yes. One of my colleagues said that he thought it would be better if I was called the untethered professor.
That would be better than unhinged.
Well, good morning, all. And, real quick, Jim, since you're the newbie here, try to explain what it is that you do and you teach.
Well, so I've been, I'm actually now the director of something called the Institute for Data Exploration Applications. So I do a lot of this stuff you hear about with big data, data analytics.
Yep.
I was quoted on the show here for some work we did on election analytics and things like that. So I do some of that. I do a lot of work in healthcare stuff. And then my background is in AI. So a lot of this new machine learning stuff comes out of old AI work. Artificial intelligence,
and we have an article about that today, so
yeah.
we'll talk.
And
I also
dabble in computer security. I do a lot of government consulting of different types. So I sort of pretty much try to keep doing a whole lot of different stuff, so no one can notice that I don't know anything.
Has Mueller subpoenaed you yet?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome. Before we get officially started on the program, I just want to remind everybody we have a very exciting thing. This week, the Lockbox opened, and today, this Thursday, we're doing very well in the Lockbox, but we want to remind you that there's a pair of tickets to the Capitol Steps at the Egg available. It's a $150 pledge. If you want one ticket, it's $100. If you want two tickets, it's $150. See, doesn't that make sense?
It does. It makes a lot of sense. And the fact of the matter is that this is a reunion that we have every year, Joe. And that's what I love about it. Because
Fifth annual.
Yeah, everybody gets together and say, how are you? How'd you do? How's your mother? How's your brother? How are you? And then we all see each other. That's what I love about it. It's the WAMC crowd.
It is. And the post show, we all go out, we go out for drinks and we talk. And,
sure.
Yeah, sure. That's right,
yeah,
Alan.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Alan, sure.
Yeah.
At Alan's house.
It may be the start of the finale when we're already on the Northway.
Just because Ira said that, I want to announce that, maybe 30 years ago, we moved into our present house in the Berkshires. We've been there for longer than that. And we brought the liquor that we had with us to the house. And that liquor is still there to the ounce.
I sure hope you don't offer that to anybody coming to your house.
Well, no, it's supposed to be better, isn't it?
I think
Joe, you know about that stuff.
It'll age well.
It'll age well, like you. It'll age well.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
I meant that as a compliment. Yeah, well, I know when we, I think we may have the alcohol that we had when we moved out of the camp last weekend.
But you're not sure.
But I'm not sure.
You'll check at lunchtime.
Right.
Do we know, we can go to our professor and ask this question. Do we know whether people are generally drinking more or less? Whether younger people are drinking less or more?
Well, we have two professors in the house. Which one would you like to pose the question to?
Well, the RPI guy.
Okay.
Alan, the answer is, I'm sure we know the answer somewhere. In fact, we probably know multiple answers, and they probably disagree with each other. But
the last drink I had of scotch was when I was like 12 years old. I shouldn't tell the story. And having terrible, coughing problems. My father gave me a belt of scotch.
Oh, well, that's a remedy. That was something that I grew up with that. Sure. Absolutely.
And you've been cured ever since. Wow.
Right.
Hasn't coughed in 60 years.
No, the problem is the cough keeps coming back, Irene. Oh, you have to continually remedy the cough.
I understand.
Yeah. I may have been worried about my cough before the show this morning. So it's a pair of Capital Steps tickets at the Egg. It's $150, and it's 7:30. And oh, by the way, I don't want to bury the lead here, but it's Friday, November 9th, which means it's just 3 days after the midterms. So
when they're gone, right, Joe?
That's right. So we only have a certain number of tickets. We're going to fill the Egg. We have for the last 4 years, and this is our fifth annual that we've done. And as Alan says, it's a reunion. We all come back. We do this. It's an annual event. And we're very excited.
Am I wrong?
You look quizzical.
No, I'm trying to remember. Isn't there is at least one member of that group who is an original, or has he finally moved on?
There are two, actually.
No kidding.
Elena Newport, who's probably one of the originals, who still is very active in the group. And then there's another gentleman by the name of Fred, but I can't think of his last name right now. And they are always active. They do a lot of the writing, but they do also a lot of the performing. They do both when they are here in the Berkshires for their run, but also when they do these shows for us, and of course the shows.
And
in
they
New
all
City.
Originally worked on Capitol Hill, if I'm not
well.
Mistaken.
And that
in
has
the
changed
old days.
A little
yeah,
bit.
That's how
yeah.
they started. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now they get people from a more diverse background.
Well, that's a tremendous show.
It really is. It's a lot of fun.
And it's my understanding, Joe, for whatever inside baseball anybody wants, that the member of the cast who sells the show to wherever they're going gets a little bit more.
Oh, wow. Now, see, that's the kind of story that you
learn inside baseball
when you go out for the post-show dinner and cocktails. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome. We have a lot to talk about, and let's get to it. Again, we welcome, first of all, a reminder, WAMC.org, if you want in on the tickets. Oh, by the way, just to help the lockbox, we need, I think the lockbox now, Alan, is at $116,000. Wow. So,
well, that's pretty good, that's right? Pretty good. I mean, it's speeding along, except that we have 500,000 listeners every month, I'm told. That's a lot of people. Everybody puts $5 or $10 in. We won't have to have a fund drive for the next couple of years.
That's right. Absolutely right. And the numbers are with us, but we just have to make it happen. So
sure.
Please, everybody, do what you can, whatever you can. If you don't want the tickets, fine. But if you can do $5 or $20 or $80, whatever you can do, that's great.
And just jumping on that idea, Joe, you know, there are two major obligations that I think we as citizens have. The first is to vote. And in this election, voting is going to be everything in terms of these congressional elections and everything else. You get out, it'll count, believe me. And then the second is, of course, to put something in a lockbox. It's in the Constitution.
It is in the Constitution. And what? just look at it with your magnifying glass, you'll find it.
Those founders were unbelievable how they foresaw the development of WAMC.
And George and I, we can do it all the time.
Just George Costanza.
All right. Good morning. Here we go. Let's start with the stories of the day. Of course, we're not going to get too far from the story that has been dominating the headlines for the last week, and that is over the latest of an accuser who has come forward regarding the Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, and now the question as to whether we were talking about this 2 days ago. I know we talked about it yesterday, too. In regards to the hearing that would allow both Brett Kavanaugh And Dr. Ford, who has made these accusations against Brett Kavanaugh, that both would have the opportunity to testimony. Well, now the we're at a bit of an impasse because the lawyer for Christine, I've heard this both ways. I've heard of Blasey and I've heard of three ways. I've heard of Blasey, Blasey, and Blassie. Does anyone know the correct?
Dr. Ford.
Dr. Ford. Dr. Christine, I think I'm going to go with Blasey because that's what I've heard the most.
I think she prefers that.
Okay.
That's what I've heard.
Christine Blasey Ford is the professor who alleged that Judge Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her when they were teenagers, said a Senate hearing set for Monday to hear her allegation would not be fair, and Democrats insisted that an FBI investigation take place. Backed by President Trump, Senate Republicans rejected any FBI inquiry and said that Monday was her chance to be heard. Dr. Blasey's resistance to appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday seemed to galvanize Republicans and drew wavering Republican senators back into Judge Kavanaugh's camp. Barring new information or an agreement by Dr. Blasey to testify, after all, Judge Kavanaugh may now have enough momentum to be confirmed as early as next week. Republicans set a committee meeting for Wednesday for a possible vote to move the nomination to the floor. Now, I don't understand this. Because it would seem to me that, and I understand there's a game of chicken going on here, but if Dr. Ford says, okay, I want you to fully investigate with the FBI, that seems to bolster her case, does it not? That I believe that you will find facts that will be on my side that otherwise would not be presented.
Knowing that if she was lying to the FBI, she would be in serious legal jeopardy.
And correct.
And she's willing to do this.
Mm-hmm. Now, the just before we delve into the subject and we throw it open to everyone, we will note that both the president and Orrin Hatch have come forward and have been the loudest in this of saying that the FBI doesn't do that. Well, the FBI does do that. They did it with Clarence Thomas, and under very, very similar, not completely similar, but very similar circumstances in 1991.
So here's the dangerous part of this. If we're all parsing this together, if in fact what ends up happening is she does not testify because she wants to go to the FBI. They're going to put this guy through no matter what. Does anybody disagree with that?
I don't think so. Any analysis that I have seen, and any legal expert and any congressional expert has said that if she decides that she is not going to do this without an FBI investigation and does not testify on Monday,
they'll pass it through.
We still don't know whether Collins, Murkowski, Corker, or Flake, any one or a combination, will vote for this guy. They might not.
I agree with you. I have a pretty good guess here.
And that
guess is they're going to pass us through.
The other asterisk, Alan, and then go to Vera, of course, but the other asterisk here, of course, is that we don't know, and the president even left this open yesterday, we don't know if there are any other accusers. And that's the other great unknown here.
So just this morning, I think, Senator Grassley announced that the Senate has to hear back from Dr. Blasey Ford's attorney by Friday morning whether she will testify or not. So I think that was a step towards absolutely snuffing out any woman, other woman potentially stepping forward, or Dr. Blasey Ford actually testifying. It is a very aggressive move.
Which, of course, Vera, is the whole point here. I think you're exactly right, and I think what's going to happen here is they have to make up their mind, these guys, the Republicans. Do we want the Supreme Court forever to be conservative as opposed to risking the women's vote in America, which is clearly upset about all of this? And do we put our people at risk in order to get the Supreme Court? And the answer is yes.
So forever, if Kavanaugh will be confirmed, he will be forever, his reputation will be forever marred if he's pushed through in this manner.
What makes you so sure? Let me give you an example of that. That's all the contemporary analysis, which we're hearing on CNN and MSNBC. You're right. There are those people who think that. And yet, Clarence Thomas sits right there on that Supreme Court, and you hear almost nothing about him, right?
Well, maybe not among your crowd, but certainly in the college crowd and among women, there are constant conversations about Clarence Thomas and what he represents and how he got on the Supreme Court. And it actually undermines the reputation of the Supreme Court and its future ability to make decisions in a totally polarized or divided country.
Well, you're the political scientist. I don't want to ever argue with you because you're much smarter than I am. But let me ask you this. If that's so true, take some of the worst decisions that this court has been making and say, has there been any compromise in their ability to, for example, do Citizens United or any of those things? No. And even by one vote, they get away with it. They don't care.
I'd
just throw in, I wouldn't say anything bad about the Senate Judiciary Committee or anything, but in 2013, when there was the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, 6 of the 22 people who voted against it are Grassley, Hatch, Graham, Cornyn, Lee, and Cruz, who are six of the most powerful members
of the
Senate Judiciary Committee. So this is not a committee that has a long history of giving in to
those issues. I just think that the Republicans are in a pickle here, and they're trying to figure out the best way to emerge from it. But I will tell you that the point that Joe raised, that this woman is urging an FBI investigation at the risk of legal jeopardy if she is not telling the truth, yet the accused, Kavanaugh, does not want this investigation. I don't know about you, but if I was accused and I believed that I was 100% innocent of these charges, I'd want the FBI, the CIA, M16, Columbo, Andy Sipowicz, the French Foreign Legion. I'd want everybody in there investigating and clearing my name.
So we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Vera Akarios-Kelly, Professor Jim Hendler, Ira Fussfeld, Dr. Alan Chartok, and did I get everybody? I think I did in a weird way.
Got me twice.
I got you twice? All right. Yeah, sorry. Well, good morning. Welcome, everybody, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So your point, Ira, right before the break, which I sort of lost track of time there because we were in a good discussion, which was, so if you're Brett Kavanaugh and you feel that you're not guilty, you want
everybody
to investigate it.
I want it, and more the merrier. I did nothing here. There's nothing to see here, but we're not getting that from him. And in the meantime, I think let's presume for the sake of discussion that she does not get her way, meaning Dr. Ford, and there is no investigation. The testimony occurs on Monday. She does not show up. He does. The Senate is likely to approve this guy, but I believe that the stain has already been accomplished on the Republicans. Now, to Alan's point, the guy, they may say the hell with it. I'm on the court. I got my guy in the court, and this is what we want. Mm-hmm. But it cannot help them, I believe, in the elections, and it may well put the Senate in jeopardy. It's generally acknowledged that the Congress is going to turn over, but not so the Senate. Well, maybe this will change that.
Well, that's right, Ira. You're right on the money. If in fact, first of all, I disagree with one thing you said, and that is he'll show up. He won't show up. There won't be a hearing on Monday. There just won't be. They'll just schedule a vote and they'll do it. And you are right. It is juxtaposing whether they are more worried about losing control of both houses or one house than they are about not controlling the Supreme Court.
But just a quick point, though, Vera, and that is that she has not yet said definitively that she will not testify on Monday if there is not an investigation by the FBI.
Not yet. She has to respond, or her attorney has to respond by tomorrow morning. What I worry about is this, as a woman, as somebody who has experienced a sexual attack as a teen, as a 15-year-old, is that you're suddenly put in this position when it's not your expertise you haven't been trained in to respond to questions by senators like Kavanaugh has. For weeks, he had time to prepare. She is a professor. She has her area of expertise. She's not used to this kind of public scrutiny and attack. She obviously had to move out of her house. She has children and a husband she's worried about. Who knows what the state of her semester looks like? What about her students? I mean, her entire life is in complete turmoil. In addition to that, she was given just a few days to have to explain something absolutely traumatic and horrible that happened to her, and she has never had the opportunity to actually process this. At least, at minimum, at such a hearing, you have to have professional staff attending to make sure this isn't a re-assault on a woman like this who has undergone this experience. So everything about the setup is despicable.
Now, and I don't disagree with a word you just said, but it would be that way regardless of an FBI investigation, correct? I mean, you would have more facts on your side, but the position, the personal toll that this takes on her would not change drastically.
It would not change drastically, but at least the FBI could then question other witnesses who have not been invited to the hearing. And we clearly know that a high school buddy of Kavanaugh's has written a book about the state of affairs in the high school, the party scene, and the kind of conduct that most likely Judge Kavanaugh was involved in. So this would give a better context to her story.
One thing really quickly, I'm sorry. Grassley, of course, is trying to spin this as we've offered. I saw him on the air this morning. Yeah. We've given her four different choices. She can come, she could talk to the staff, she could go later, all the rest of that stuff. They are worried about the women's vote. There's no two ways about that. But here's the downside, Vera, and it's the one I'm most worried about. There will be people on the line here who say she's not testifying. Now, you and I don't believe this, but that she's not testifying because she's not telling the truth. That's what you worry about.
Right, but here's the point. Why would she have not told the truth? Her life was fine. She had a perfectly reasonable life at home. She had a fabulous career. Now everything is in turmoil. Everything is in question in her life. She's being publicly scrutinized and filleted. And that is something a woman does voluntarily? I'm sorry. Anybody who believes that is not clear about what an experience like that does to women.
And yet, are there anybodies out there? In other words, you say anybody who believes that may be a fool, may be wrong, all the rest of it. I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. Nevertheless, the question is, will there be anybodies like that out there?
Well, you just read the Twitter feed. She's been getting death threats. There's the whole argument about, even if he did do it, does that matter? This should be a political issue rather than a issue about people and about behaviors. We know he's lied on other things. Now suddenly we're piling this on.
And that supports Vera's point, is why would this woman subject herself to this kind of vile reaction if she was not telling the truth?
Right.
I mean, I think it's the most honorable thing for her to step forward, because she was personally appalled at the idea that somebody who has done something like that would be nominated and then confirmed to one of the highest offices in this country. That is what compelled her to step forward and wreck her own life.
You know, and what I've heard from the right and a lot of women actually saying this that are being brought out to talk about this, of saying, to your point, well, where was she when he was getting his life appointment on the federal bench? I don't know.
I don't know the answer, but
would you even know? I don't know. If you're living your life and you're doing your thing, and it's not the Supreme Court of the United States of America.
She lives in California. He was
in Maryland.
In Maryland. So why would you know for sure? You don't follow somebody's career around like that. She was not a Kavanaugh stalker. But then all of a sudden, Kavanaugh shows up all over TV. Hearings, grandiose man, he's being paraded around, and that is what compelled her to step forward. And obviously, she has struggled with that decision over months in the summer.
Well, and only, I mean, but originally, it was just a matter of days after the nomination in which she came forward and wrote the letter to her congresswoman, to mm-hmm. Dianne Feinstein, and the Washington Post.
Right. But the letter was there earlier. It was her coming forward and saying, correct, it was me. That was mm-hmm. the... And it seemed like that was after it became pretty clear he was going to be confirmed.
And, of course, the other piece to this story is, why won't they allow her to have the FBI hearing? And in large part, it's because they want this vote before Election Day. If they extend the length of this whole process, yep, now we run past this first Tuesday in November, yep, and if the Republicans do not do well or somehow, mm-hmm, well, if the Republicans do not do well and the Congress is going to turn over, then they may not get their appointment through.
Particularly Ira, the Senate. The Senate is everything. Yep. Of course, they can still do it after the midterms,
right,
although it'll be harder because, you know, there'll still be days where they still have the majority.
Well, they'll do a reverse Merrick Garland.
So here's another completely different question. If I wanted to be an advisor to the Republicans, you can actually find another judge who's not this... there's not the question about if he's lied before even more conservative. I mean, you could simply ask Kavanaugh to step aside.
But that'll take into the new year.
Pick somebody you can push through, yeah, without this kind of
but
cloud
not in
d- hanging
would not
over.
Enough time.
But not in days. Really.
Yeah,
not in really days, time. But in months. I believe they could get it done.
That depends on what's going to happen in the election.
Well, but if they did that, then by your logic, Alan, they'd be improving their chances of keeping the Senate.
Right.
So,
I'm sorry, I'm not following.
Well, you said that if they push this guy through, that's going to hurt them in the Senate vote.
That's
the Senate
correct.
Vote is still mostly in their favor. So if they...
Right.
Gave in and moved forward with another candidate, naming them before the election, I think you'd see that it would sort of maybe dig them out of the hole. Although I don't want to give them advice.
I doubt they're going to do that. You may be right, but I doubt they're going to do that. I don't think they'll do that.
I don't think Trump will back down.
No, let's see if Trump engages in a Twitter tirade and changes the dynamics on the ground.
But that is interesting, too, I think.
Yes.
And I've seen this explained a bunch of different ways on various shows. But it does seem as though the president is uncharacteristically,
yes,
restrained in this.
Right.
He said that he believes that she should be heard. He believes that, you know, we want to get to the bottom of it and find out. And yet I think this guy is
so
great and nobody's better. Well, okay. And that's what you – right, Alan. That's exactly it. I mean,
so what
do they know?
Okay, a couple. Exactly. Number one, they may know something we don't know. Right? Okay, that's the number one possibility. Number two, this president and his party are looking at that women's vote. And Vera, this is where you come in with your analysis. Looking at that women's vote and saying, this is going to be a disaster for us if we don't play this right. And you can see Grassley being untypically... trying to be untypically going along with her needs
and yet still coming off as a snake.
Yes, of course.
Oh, absolutely. Wasn't he the one who said, well, why can't she remember certain details? It must have not happened
Yeah, and that was Orrin Hatch, too.
I don't think she was even
in the room.
Oh,
yeah.
Or she must have been confused about the man. I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? You don't think you remember after an assault like that who that was?
While Trump has been relatively restrained, he has continued to emphasize, this guy Kavanaugh is a great guy, and he's really given a hard time, and this is in the wake of him doing similar things with Roy Moore and mm-hmm. with Roger Ailes and with Bill O'Reilly.
But I wrote, then why is he uncharacteristically
in my opinion it's because of his own history of alleged sexual abuse and difficulties with women, and that he's finally listening to somebody in the White House who's saying, don't put yourself out there, because all of these stories are going to come back at you.
Now what he keeps saying again and again and again is, it's not my decision, I made the nomination, it's now up to the Senate. Why is he deferring to the Senate that way?
Well, I think Kellyanne Conway has finally, you know, reached him somehow and convinced him to hold back. I think he's actually listening to some of the women advisors because they have scared him that the women's vote will just simply disappearing, falling away.
I have a problem with that. I have a problem with that. Let me just quickly
say... Okay, we have to take a break, but go ahead.
Okay, my problem with that is that Kellyanne Conway has survived because she is a yes person for him. It doesn't make sense that we ascribe to her the judgment in the room.
Well, she has gone on shows to describe the advice that she has given the president, and it's the kind of behavior that Trump manifests at the moment.
We disagree.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have some letters as well. We'll talk about other topics, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We are very happy you are with us. Let me get to a couple of letters, and then we will move on to some other things. Tom writes, I believe that the Republicans are avoiding an investigation because they're already aware of the skeleton in the closet or have heard rumors of it. And it just seems odd, given the rumor mill that is Washington, that if there was more here, that we would have heard it by now. But I don't know.
I think maybe what they're concerned about is that he will be caught in a lie, and that would disqualify him.
I heard I don't know if anyone else heard this, but so when the FBI does, because the FBI did an original background check, correct?
Yes.
Correct. So when the FBI did an original background check, so if they found out that he had a history of drug use, then that would be immediately disqualifying.
Yes.
Yes.
And yet this isn't.
No. But wasn't he also having some financial debts that were fascinating?
By the way, yeah. I don't want to say that he had any drug history.
No.
He didn't.
Yeah.
I don't want to make that case. But
right.
What I'm saying is that what is disqualifying and immediately puts people out to pasture, and yet, so we don't know even in that investigation was something that it was heard or rumored.
Right.
Pete writes, isn't this a state crime that could/should be investigated? Well, that is the problem with the statute of limitations, correct?
Yes.
So I did hear recently that Maryland has a much longer or possibly infinite statute of limitations on particular sex crimes. I don't know if this counts. It sounds like everyone's saying no, so I don't know whether that's an accurate statement or not, but I'm not a lawyer, but someone should look into that.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to find that out. And the second part of Pete's question is, if Dr. Ford ends up not appearing Monday, can she not easily appear in an interview for a national audience, just as others have chosen to do?
But she wouldn't be under oath. You know, if she's under oath if she goes to the Senate.
And it's the fake media, right?
Yeah. Well, then it also looks like she's exploiting. I mean, they would run with that this was all a self-aggrandizement ploy.
Yeah. Right.
And Peter makes this point. The Senate Republicans have not changed their strategy. They plan to ram this through before Dr. Ford came forward. Now, if she testifies, they will merely listen politely and then vote to confirm anyway.
Yeah, possibly.
I don't think they'll listen politely. I think they'll attack her like crazy and then vote in favor.
In a private hearing, they don't even have to attack her. They can just politely listen and not take anything into account. I think the public attacks would come... Or the attacks would come in a public environment to send a message, maybe, but they don't even have to go there.
True.
I think.
Boy, I tell you, if they both testify and her testimony is compelling and she comes across as truthful, and his does not, those senators are going to have to think long and hard about whether they.
Well, this gets back to the conversation, Alan, that we had originally on Monday about this. Do you have the votes? If she comes out and if it's credible, are you going to have the votes?
Well, you know, it all depends on Susan Collins and Murkowski. These are tough ones. Collins makes noise, but she doesn't follow through.
So
I think she does what she's going to do anyway. She's going to vote for him.
So another thing I just want to point out is that we're putting all of the burden for all decision-making on a single woman to step forward, and then we're putting the burden on female senators to decide. I mean, it's pretty amazing that we have an accused male perpetrators, and the burden is all on women.
Vera, how would you feel as a woman watching an interrogation in the Senate of this woman if the interrogator was a female attorney, a hired slash appointed by the Senate committee to do the questioning so the 11 males wouldn't be the quote-unquote bad guys?
Yeah, I read it. Before Vera goes, they're in a tough spot. You can hear it from the way Grassley and the others are handling this. They do not want to alienate the women.
Right. And they will come to, you know, Vera mentioned earlier about how hard it would be for somebody like this woman to be stepped into the fire like this. Regardless of her performance, there would be a large segment of the population who believes that those men in the Senate piled on.
Yep. Do you remember Anita Hill receiving the question, "Are you a scorned woman?"
Yeah.
Think of that. But it doesn't matter if a male or a female asks that kind of a question. It is the way you ask the question, and what the expected answer is. So the level of sensitivity matters more than the human body form asking the question.
Well, you're right about that. But Vera, let's go further with Collins for a moment. She has made it clear that if the nominee is going to be opposed to a woman's right to control her own body, she would be against it, right? So far, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay. And then when it is clear to a lot of people that he is hedged on that issue, she says, "I'm satisfied with his answer." That doesn't give you pause?
I think there's always a difference between public statements and private thinking and private conversations. I'm not convinced that we know all of the votes quite yet until everyone has heard and received all of the information and possibly has a chance to consider how information was shared and what information was shared.
Well, of course you're right about that. Nevertheless, up to now, she's been pretty specific about when she's on board and when she's not, right?
Publicly, she has.
Oh, yes, she has, right. She has said, no, I'm satisfied with his explanation, for example, on reproductive rights. Now, that was pretty specific. It meant I'm going to vote for him. So, and she is the one, not anybody else of you, who has raised the possibility that she's going to vote for him on that issue.
Yeah, she experiences a lot of pressure. We're putting the burden on female senators.
Yeah, but
why should female senators push back against everything on their own? Why are we focusing on women senators to call to change venues? Why? Why aren't there more men that are considering this issue?
That's a great point.
It is a great point. And but what is the answer? I mean,
I'm sorry, I'm not going along with it. I truly think that she has raised the expectation herself and has done the right thing by being courageous up to now and saying she will not go along with this as a woman because of her views on this thing. And yet there is an indication she will. Now, you're right. The men should, Vera, you're absolutely right. The men should be going along with it, but they ain't. The white men on the Republican side on that and that group are not going along with it. So here's this woman and another woman who say, we're not going to go along with it. So that makes her a hero, not a heel.
Oh, but why are we rushing to the two women about this issue? Why don't we rush to the men about
this
issue?
We are. I mean, that's exactly what we're doing. We are saying to the men, this is disgusting, this is awful. But these two women come forward and they say, we are not happy with this and we'll vote against it if this is what we think is happening. That's all I'm saying.
I certainly hope that one of the things that's in consideration is the red state Democrats are going to be sitting there going, you know, this gives us a way we can now move ourselves into the middle a little better and without having to alienate the base. So I think that's interesting, too, in terms of the whole Senate.
Could you go a little further with that? I don't fully understand.
Well, so if we're looking at the Senate voting, right, and what could turn the Senate, you have a lot of Democrats who are in states that voted for Trump, and they've had to be very careful about their about what they're saying in person. Now, this issue gives them an issue which can appeal to the women in the middle, which was a key demographic in the last election.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many other stories to discuss. We will do so. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us for this Thursday morning, the 20th September. It is 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. So we have Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Jim Henwer, and Vera Akarios-Kelly. And we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so let us talk about, well, we have a couple of letters. Let me get to those, and then we'll move on to some other things. Mary writes, why not have Dr. Ford attend the hearing, state her accusation, request an FBI investigation, state the precedent for an investigation, state her willingness to reappear at future hearings upon the completion of the investigation, and then leave the room. This way her accusation is on the record.
Well, it's possible. She could do something like that. I mean, she has till tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., from what I understand, to figure out what approach she uses. So she may be there and participate to an extent.
David writes, the Republicans don't want an FBI investigation, partly because Kavanaugh would have to give sworn testimony. Lying to the FBI is a federal crime. Journalists like Ronan Farrow will pursue the story. What happens if overwhelming evidence is uncovered that a sitting Supreme Court justice lied to the FBI? What would the political implications be for the Republicans?
Wow.
Are there any political implications for anything anymore?
Good question. But, you know, Supreme Court, we haven't had that challenge yet.
Yeah.
So.
And where would it go? To the court.
All right. I don't want to waste our opportunity here with Jim Henwer. So there's a very interesting story that has been written about much this week in on Tech Pages, which IBM is debuting tools to help prevent bias in artificial intelligence. The issue here is that, well, what IBM is trying to do is to help companies mitigate the chances that their artificial intelligence technologies unintentionally discriminate against certain groups like women and minorities. The technology giant's tool announced this week, announced yesterday actually, can inspect AI-powered software for unintentional bias when it makes decisions, like when a loan might be denied to a particular person. The technology industry is increasingly combating the problem of bias in machine learning systems used to power software that can automatically recognize images and pictures or translate languages. A number of companies have suffered a public relations black eye when their technologies fail to work as well for minority groups as for white users. So how prevalent is this problem?
So it's early days yet, and we're still trying to figure out exactly what the problem is and how bad it is and things like that. Let me, in the interest of full disclosure, mention that IBM is a major funder of Rensselaer and my own lab. That's and we do a lot of work with them in artificial intelligence, not on this project, this particular project. But the real problem is we don't yet know for some of these technologies exactly where the biases is. Is it in the program? Is it in how the program learns? Is it in the data? You know, I'll give you a nice, easy to understand example, right?
Oh,
I
God,
recently
thank
got
you.
I recently got a cell phone
okay.
that does face recognition.
Yes.
Okay. When I take my glasses off, it doesn't recognize me. So I was telling this to a friend who says, really? When I take my glasses off, I have no problem. So she and I sort of sat in the same place and tried it. And for her, it was fine. For me, it wasn't. So now, what's causing that? We don't know if it's something about the face, something about the glasses, male versus female. So there's so many different factors in the human world. And when we sort of turn things into data that we can feed to these machines, we can only do some of them. So there's all sorts of kind of biases. There's what's called internal biases, which has to do with, is it representing the data right? And external, which is, does it catch the real world? So all of these tools, Microsoft has one coming out soon, Google, IBM, all these tools are doing what we call internal bias, is the thing getting the right numbers given what it should get. But they're not really yet ready to start saying, did we get the right data in there? Have we collected things right? So it's going to be a long time while we explore this issue.
How does it mirror the biases that we have in life anyway, in the sense of is that part of the problem?
that's part of the problem. And the question is, we don't really know. So there was a face recognition thing that recently did really well. It gets about 90% total right. But when they broke it down, they separated out the pictures, the white men, white women, black men, black women, right? The numbers were very different. It did much worse in recognition. So the overall number turned out to be a very bad thing to look at. You had to break it into those pieces. But are those the only important pieces, right? Is gender the right way to look at these things? Are there other things that might have been even more important? We're just really starting to understand this. So on one hand, this is a very, very powerful new technology. On the other hand, we don't really have a clue as to some of this. So there's a lot of research to be done. And a lot of what looked easy, self-driving cars, things like that, are turning out to be harder and harder as they come in contact with the real world.
The last line of this article, which you just alluded to, is that despite the flood of new AI auditing tools, the problem of AI, artificial intelligence, and bias will likely continue to persist because rooting out bias from AI is still in its infancy. So if we had a timeline, I mean, this could take years.
Years. And so, or the question is, can we ever get it, quote, right, unquote? Because after all, your brain is a lot better than the computer's, and you have biases, right, from how you grew up. We're talking about this whole election thing with Republicans versus Democrats. Why aren't we just all rationally saying, well, if this is the case, this is how it should be? So these technologies are never going to be as good as we are at this real world.
Which is a really interesting idea, because I think a lot of my students say, oh, it once we will have the technology to give us all the answers, and technology circumvents human biases, which in fact doesn't seem to be correct.
It puts the human biases somewhere else. And again, humans are really complicated. So I wrote a book on this, John, we can talk.
Okay.
But me and a colleague, and we talked about exactly why these things are so hard. And things, you know, one of my favorite examples is there was a sign near a prison in Texas which says, hitchhikers may be fleeing convicts. So now the question is, should you pick them up or not? Well, if they're running away from convicts, we as humans don't even notice there's a problem there. If I said refugees may be fleeing oppressive governments, it's exactly the opposite thing, and we don't even notice. So we as humans just have this amazing ability to look at a big, complicated world and figure out what we want to see in it, and the systems don't yet. So we have a long way to go. But meanwhile, it's a very powerful assistive technology. So humans plus computers are now outperforming either one alone in medical situations and a lot of other situations that are really important to us. And that's probably the future.
So the story here is that IBM is debuting these tools to help prevent bias in AI. So we won't know how much we can trust these new tools.
There's a question of exactly. So we know it will make things better. How much better to what point is what becomes the harder question.
And we don't know, Joe, you say they're doing it in order to achieve a certain end. We don't know what their motive is, right? I mean, we can say we think we know what their motive is, which is, as we just heard, to make things better. But it also may be to protect themselves because they know this is coming.
So there's a huge amount of stuff going on out there right now in what's called ethical AI. How do we use it right? How do we make decisions? And some of it is exactly the issue that Vera brought up, which is that if I have people who believe the computer is always right, and I have people who know the computer is not always right, how do we regulate that? How do we make it so the legal system is struggling with this and, of course, moves very slowly against a very fast-moving technology? Governments are deploying these technologies.
And I was
like
just going to follow up with you on a question about that, because intelligence services must be really interested in this technology. And what do you think of that?
There's tons of stuff being used. But most of the intelligence services at the moment know you have to keep a human in the loop, because it's an adversarial situation, right? We want to be very careful about what we think about other people and not let them trick us through a computer, right? When we're out in the real world, so when your doctor is looking at something, if the computer says, you know, I think it might be this disease, and the doctor says no, well, who's got the liability? What happens? What if it is that disease? What if it's not that disease? So really it's that system of the human computer can help us solve that. but what are the laws? Who's to blame? The automated car hit someone. You know, we don't even know legally.
So
what
is
that
it is. Realistic to expect perfection? I know that there, I presume the goal is perfection. I can recall attending a function at the late lamented IBM plant in Kingston. And they were talking about they were talking about whatever computer they were working on there. It was probably a large mainframe. And the IBM guy said, you know, we can't afford for there to be even one iota of a mistake coming out of this computer. Can you imagine, you know, if we sold you a computer and you did a calculation and the calculation was wrong? Whereas in a business like my former business, if you told me out of 1,000 newspaper deliveries that day, we got 998 of them right, well, we were very happy with that number. IBM would say, we can't afford to be 998. We've got to be 1,000. Is that a realistic goal with the how the technology has evolved?
That's right. So the answer is certain things we can get towards that and maybe even right. But this so-called artificial intelligence, the answer is probably not. I'll give you a good example. I was playing with some of these this morning as I was looking at some of these articles. Mm-hmm. So if I go out on Twitter and I say, let's look at Kavanaugh and let's look at Ford and let's see how the sentiment. So who's saying good things, who's saying bad things, right? If I found that in Michigan, there were a whole bunch of bad things being said about Ford, I'd say, oh, look, that's a political issue, right? Except I might be looking at the fact that in Detroit, Ford is closing a plant and there's a bunch of upset workers. So Ford is an ambiguous word. It means two different things. Kavanaugh isn't.
Right.
And we're not good enough yet that the systems can pull those apart well enough. So even when it gets the right answer, we still have to look at it as humans to make sure it's doing it correctly.
And yet, Watson wins in chess, right? So we're making
Watson wins in Jeopardy.
In Jeopardy and in chess, I believe.
Chess was an earlier. Yeah, but yes, and Go.
So therefore, it may not be perfect, but it's getting there.
So Alexa and Siri would be come under the heading of artificial intelligence.
They would be early artificial intelligence, and they're doing some great stuff. They recognize most people's voices pretty well, and they're good at answering a question. But I can give you questions. We all can give you questions, which they do a terrible
job on. Which they miss,
on.
Right.
I ask,
and that's the tricky part.
Yeah.
And they don't give a conversation. Look at how we solve a problem
right.
by discussing it.
My wife and I were having a discussion this morning. Do more accidents happen in the bathroom or in the kitchen? And I won't get into why we were asking this question. So I said, hey, Google, do more accidents happen in the kitchen or in the bathroom? And then Google threw back at us this article that said, yes, the largest number of household accidents happen in either the kitchen or the bathroom. That was of no use to us.
Yeah, it doesn't really know the question you're asking. It doesn't really know why you're asking it. And again, our book goes into a whole lot of detail about this because there are situations where there's a story about a guy named Petrov. This was a Russian officer who decided not to launch a nuclear strike when his machines indicated the U.S. might be launching a missile strike. So he's known as the man who saved the world. He passed away recently. And what he did is he used his human judgment and just said, what I'm seeing reported by my machines doesn't make sense. If the U.S. was attacking Russia, it wouldn't look like this.
So what's the name of the book? Because we always ask out Malcolm that question. We have to do it with you, too.
My book is called Social Machines, The Coming Collision of Artificial Intelligence, Social Networks, and Humanity.
We may want to write that down.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like an art.
Social Machines is easy enough.
Social Machines, we'll do
good.
It.
I was like, well, wow, that is an academic title if I've ever seen one. Thank you.
Warner Brothers has opted to. Yeah, Warner Brothers has opted the movie rights.
Yeah. We've sold dozens of these.
Yes. Sounds like a dystopia coming.
So Maria writes a letter. Let me ask you this question. Maria says, look at who writes the original code. Over 90% white men. It would be easier to root out bias if the creators are diverse. Is that a fair argument?
So, you know, what I'd say is it was a fair argument, but it's becoming less and less fair because now it's not actually the code. So all of these systems we call machine learning are pretty much using the same math. And that math isn't really white male or anything else. But the data being fed into it is being picked by people, and that's where the biases can be. And so, you know, we still teach our students in computer science how to debug code. We haven't started, we're just starting to at Rensselaer, teach them how to debug data, how to figure out, are you actually giving it what it needs to know to make the right kind of decisions?
We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We have about 5 minutes left. I want to talk about Brexit because I feel that this is a huge story that we haven't talked a lot about in a while. With about 6 months to go until Britain quits the European Union, time is short and much is unresolved. But a common goal now binds British Prime Minister Theresa May and her continual counterparts getting a deal, perhaps any deal, to push withdrawal over the line. Why is this becoming such a big issue, Vera?
So just last week, the mayor of London openly suggested that there should be a revote, that there should be multiple options on the table. So the UK is incredibly polarized. We had Northern Ireland voting originally in the referendum, wanting to remain in the European Union. Scotland overwhelmingly wanted to remain. London wanted to remain, whereas sort of the more rural areas wanted to leave. So it was sort of a differentiation between older, lesser educated voters who wanted to focus on domestic economic revitalization, whereas younger voters were very interested in global mobility. So at this point, it's been going for a year and a half. Theresa May has attempted to push through something, and they only have 6 months left. She does not have strong support inside of the UK among her conservative party. There were attempts to remove her before, and so she's at this moment in this meeting in Salzburg with all the EU representatives, right, trying to hammer out some kind of a deal. Some kind of a deal, ideally for her, that would remain, economic relations would remain, but the UK would gain some sense of strong controls over borders and some other decision making.
So that's the C word. That's compromise, right?
Yes, yes.
And is that, so that, how does that affect her politically?
She cannot survive if she does not come up with some kind of resolution to this debacle.
Some sort of Brexit-like strategy.
So Brexit-like strategy, Brexit soft or Brexit light, as it is currently advertised. I mean, something where you have an agreement, some sort of agreement, something. If she doesn't have an agreement of sorts, she will not survive.
So, Vera, is this a game of chicken between EU and England the way we were talking about?
It does seem like that might be the outcome, because the European Union officials are saying, well, listen, there's very little time. We'd like you to continue to have some relationship with us. You don't want to have, from one day to the next, all trucking to stop, your vegetables to rot. You want to have something that's written out. So come to the table. Let's figure out step by step where we can go. She's under extreme pressure to hold off against the insurgents within her own party, and obviously also Labour Party's gunning for her.
We've got about a minute. Go ahead,
okay,
Alan.
So Vera, very quickly, obviously the European Union has to support her to some degree because her opponents are the ones who will kill them.
The European Union, I think, is just trying to hold together the European's reputation and its ability to act in a unified manner. So I think they're at this point willing to give her a little bit, but they're not under pressure to really cave to her. I think she's under more pressure.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. My thanks to Vera Carius Kelly, Jim Henler. Thank you, Jim. You'll come back, yes?
Oh, I'd love to.
Excellent. Ira Fussfeld, you'll come back, yes?
Oh, yeah, you can't get rid of me.
All right. And Alan, you're going to be away for a few days, but then you'll come back.
Yes, I will.
Excellent. All right. Travel safe, my friend. Thank you very much. We'll be back right after this.